This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it's Lee Salisbury here. Welcome to Soap from the Box, the TV behind-the-scenes podcast where the biggest stars come to talk. But it's Friday, which means it's time to go retro for spin-off show Pop from the Box. Last week, it was the turn of Richie Neville from Five. This week, it's a boy band who had the most members, I think, in the history of boy bands. Remember, though, if you're a soap fan, listen to Lucy Fallon that dropped on Monday from Coronation Street. She returns to Coronation Street after Christmas as Bethany Platt. On Monday, what a treat. Annette Badland, she was Aunt Baby in EastEnders, and she was also a main star of Ted Lasso, one of the best TV shows for years and years and years. Have a great weekend. Listen to this and enjoy. My guest today is part of a group that was at one time probably the biggest group to have ever existed, as in how many band members it actually had, as in 10. When formed, they were called the self-proclaimed pioneers of chav culture by their creator. They went on to have 7 top 10 singles and 2 gold certified albums in the UK. There are now 4 original members left in the band, and they are one of the headline acts on the pop stage of this year's Reminisce Festival in St. Helens near Liverpool on the 9th of September. It's a pleasure to welcome one of them here today, Melody, a.k.a. Chris McKechnie, to the show. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. Do I call you Melody or do I call you Chris?
Hey, call me whatever you want. But Chris, most of my mates just call me Mello now.
Do they? Okay.
I think my wife and my mum are probably the only people that call me Chris nowadays.
Oh, okay. Like if you've been naughty as well, if you've done
something. Yeah, exactly.
Wrong.
No, that's Christopher if I've been naughty.
Oh, right. Okay. That's when it's really serious. So, yeah, I mean, I remember. So, I used to work on the Saturday show. I don't know whether you remember coming on that. It was like the Saturday BBC show. And I remember when you guys came in. I mean, it was pandemonium. I mean, 10 members of a band. I mean, it must have been madness being all of you going around the country, the world together.
Yeah, it was crazy all the time, but it was mad, but it was also just normal because it was all we knew, really. We was all together in school, and then from school doing the band, we was all together as well. So I think we just took it all in our stride. Every day was just fun.
So how did Blazing Squad first come about then? Because I know at first when you started releasing stuff, it was like underground white labels that then that's how it's. But how did it start at school? Did you just get together at school?
Yeah, so originally in school, we was like 2 different groups of like 5 MCs because like garage music was big at the time. So we used to do a lot of like MCing. And whenever there was like a party at school or like someone had a free house or whatever, it would be either one of the groups of 5 would take the decks and do the music and the MCing. And then another boy from our school done work experience in a studio. And it cost like 200 quid to make a song. So we wanted a song of our own because it was 200 quid. We thought, let's put the 2 bands together, 20 quid each.
Right.
We literally just made the song to have our own song to play at these house parties. And we ended up getting signed off of the back of that song. I think the people that produced it showed it to some of the right people, and East West ended up picking it up and signing us.
That's amazing. So when you say first sign, were you signed when you did the underground white labels? That was with the company, wasn't it?
So that was kind of like a tester one. There was a guy that wanted to sign us. So us and him kind of set up our own little label called Weighty Plates Music. And we put a couple of songs out on the underground, and they done pretty well. So then the main label took us on, and then that's when we ended up doing Crossroads and recording the album.
Yeah, because I think one of them, I think I read one of the white labels made it to like 78 or something in the top 100, which was like pretty unheard of for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So it went number one on the underground charts, but then actually made it into the official charts as well, which was like at the time kind of wasn't really happening.
And then, so you did get signed, obviously. What was that like as a group? So when you joined as this 10... Five, and did you just not go back from that then once you'd started recording as a 10?
No, once we'd done that, we kind of realized that it worked quite well. So obviously we all knew each other well from school anyway, and it was kind of one of the the Mortem area, really.
And it must have been like, so when you actually got signed and like you said, you released the first big single, the kind of debut single to the world, was a cover of the Bone Thugs and Harmony song Crossroads. It must have been incredible. I mean, like, there's 10 of you from school suddenly signed a major record deal. What was it like?
To be honest, like, whenever like I hear it explained back like that, I realise how big of a deal it actually was. But at the time, I think because there were so many of us and we was all just surrounded by our mates still, I don't think any of us really took a grasp on how big of a deal it was at the time. Because it wasn't really something that we was out searching for. It kind of fell on our laps, yeah. So I don't think we, even when Crossroads went to number one, I think we knew it was a big deal, but we kind of just thought, oh, that must just be how it goes. You put a song out and it goes number one, because it was the first time we put a song out in the mainstream. And I think we kind of just took it in our stride.
Took it for granted, I suppose. I think back then as well, actually, it kind of was the way things were going. It's like it was the era of bands, and it was the era of that people releasing songs and kind of going straight to number one with their first singles. It became kind of part. Well, I think people were being dropped from their record label if they didn't go to number one straight away.
Yeah, well, definitely if you weren't in like the top 10 or top five. And the thing is, well, it's kind of hard, because as good as it is to come straight in at number one, it then means anything after that.
Need to replicate it.
It's like a lot of pressure after. I think after Crossroads was when we kind of started to feel the pressure of we need to actually like put work in and graft to keep this going.
And when they told you, was it their decision to release a cover? I mean, were you kind of pleased as a group to release a cover? As again, it was kind of like part of the course back then, often when new bands do a big cover.
It was a bit of yes and no, really, because as MCs at the time, we really liked to like kind of write our own raps and verses and stuff. So when they put the song to us, obviously we all knew of the song Bone Thugs and Harmony, Crossroads at the time, and we was kind of like, can we really touch this song? And we said we would give it a go, but we didn't want to do. There was no way we was going to do like the original raps. So we said to them, like, as long as we can write our own verses. To put our own kind of spin on it, then we'll give it a go. Standard Flow was originally actually meant to be the first single, and a lot of the footage from the video of Crossroads was shot for another song.
They'd
kind of done like a U-turn at the last minute, and we had to reshoot like all the lip sync parts for Crossroads. And it obviously ended up being the right decision, because it went number one. Sorry if you can hear my son crying.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to say, yeah, how life's changed now. Listen to now. But and then as a group of 10, I mean, talking about earlier, like I remember you guys coming on the Saturday show. So if you had like Westlife, you, and I remember, you'd have like about 30 artists. Did it become a bit of a night? Because, you know, as bands stay together, as we all know, loads of bands then have in fights and stuff. Did the fame kind of affect you as a group?
No, I think in that sense, the advantage we had over a lot of other bands were kind of put together. So there was like members from all different walks of life kind of being put together into a house and having to work together, whereas we'd all grown up with each other. So none of us had a problem with telling one of the other ones to shut up or pipe down if they was being out of line. We kind of kept each other in line
Yeah, I suppose you already knew each other's like, right, like if so-and-so's feeling like that, don't make it worse or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And were you big around, how many places do you remember traveling around loads? Like, because again, at the time they were pushing bands left, right and centre. I mean, I always say, I remember bands used to turn up at the Saturday show and some of them forgot what country they were in because they were doing so much promo. Were you the same?
Yeah. We was not quite as much as the other bands for some reason, probably because it would cost the label twice.
Oh, yeah,
it cost
a god. You'd need a whole plane. Yeah.
I remember we was back and forth from Germany a lot. We had a really big following in Germany. So I think they kind of focused more on the countries that were having the bigger followings in, like Holland, Germany. We went to Norway a few times. And I know we had some success out in Asia, but we never actually got to go out there.
Yeah, because Asia was massive for, like, I remember I went on tour with Blue to Asia, and oh my God, I've never seen anything like it. It was crazy.
Yeah, which we was gutted about, because we'd hear from all the other artists how good it was out there. But it just, I don't know, it just never fell on our roster for us to go out there.
And how did, like, the lifestyle change? Were you all partying suddenly? Or again, were you all quite workaholics? What was it? Was it suddenly to have money and to be invited to, like, everywhere?
Yeah, I think it was like a bit of both. We was all really like workaholics. We hardly had a day off back then. I mean, it would be like press day, then it would be studio, photo shoot, then it would be like a show. So there was a lot going on. A lot of the partying would happen maybe more for like after shows and stuff. But bearing in mind as well, we was only like 16, 17 at the time.
Yeah, I would say
a lot of nightclubs knew of our age. But I mean, when we done the Smash Hits tour with all the other artists at the time, like Girls Aloud, Westlife, and all those Sugar Babes, there was always after parties, and we somehow always managed to get into the after parties and the nightclubs for that tour. So that was really a lot of good memories from then.
Yeah, good old Smash Hits.
Yeah.
Smash Hits was amazing. So then let's carry on. So Crossroads, obviously straight to number one. Like you said, then it's hard to keep that up. And you had four more top 10 hits before Flip Reverse, which I'm going to pick on because that was picked to relaunch Top of the Pops, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So that must have been a cool thing to do as well.
Yeah, that was great, because I think at the time, I think Andy Peters had become the new like boss at Top of the Pops. And when we first started out, he'd done our media training, so he kind of got us prepped for TV and radio, the do's and don'ts, don't chew chewing gum and all those sort of things. So when he launched the show, he asked us to do it, and he'd done a great setup for it. Actually, I think we had like the most extras there's ever been on there. I say it started outside the building with like 100 extras. So that was really good.
Where was that? Outside Television Centre?
Yeah, the Television Centre. So I think we had like 100 people all in blazers.
Wow.
And we all had our hoods up, and then we kind of came on the stage, and then us 10 took our hoods off, and then all the rest were like backing dancers. But
oh, that's amazing.
Really cool. Yeah, there's a lot of rehearsal time went into that one.
And you must have been, because you were kind of quite stand outish. That, like you mentioned, there were Girls Aloud, Westlife, Blue. They were all kind of in the same genre in a way. There was a lot of pop.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a band like you guys, was there? You were the only one kind of doing it.
Yeah, we was. I mean, our music and style, even what we wore and how we carried ourselves, was very different to everyone else. And I think that's another thing that kind of stands out, when you've got like a band that's like organically formed rather than kind of pieced together. Because we wasn't kind of hunting or looking to become pop stars. It kind of just fell on our laps. So we kind of tried to be as much ourselves as we could.
And when you say like that, did the organicness stay? Did the record company try to push you in certain directions? Because as we weren't like styling and stuff like that, did you stay quite in control of that?
With the styling, I'd say we did. We'd definitely be like in like discussion with the stylists and stuff of what we did and didn't like. I think the music that we put out became more influenced by the record label. So I think some of the singles that we put out, had it been up to us, we may not have chosen. Things like Love and the Lion. I remember at the time. Looking back on it now, it was quite a good single, because it done well. But at the time, we had loads of arguments between us and the label, because they wanted it out and we really didn't like the song at the time.
Right.
So there'd be a lot of back and forths, more about the style of music we was doing rather than anything else.
And I'm guessing you 10 normally agreed on stuff like that, because otherwise that's a whole different. But if you're all disagreeing as well, did you all kind of have the same mindset about tracks and what was good and what?
Yeah, I think there might have been some of us that were saying, oh well, we don't like it, but the label must know what they're doing, like kind of trying to convince the other guys that were really against it, and there'd be a few back and forths between us. But ultimately we'd all try and put the same argument forward as a unit to the record label. We'd kind of all
Poor record
down behind each other.
They were like, here they come. Here come these 10 again. Bring the four blue boys back. God, we've got 10
of them. But normally they'd throw a load of new free trainers and clothes
out. Oh, right, brilliant.
And then get their own way in the end.
while you're trying to want to get you to sign over the next single.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so then the second album, obviously, it didn't quite have the same, well, it didn't have the same sales. It only reached 36. I mean, I say over 36, that's still amazing. But obviously, did you kind of start thinking then, right, this could be the end of the deal?
Yeah, it was a bit, that, I remember that time being a bit of a weird time, because that's when all like LimeWire and all the illegal downloads came out.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like the transition into like online music, because we was doing tours and stuff and selling out shows. Like the tickets were flying off, but then the sales weren't matching that. And then we'd turn up to like a CD store to do like a signing of the new album, and loads of fans would be turning up with like burnt copies of the album.
Really, were they?
Yeah, so they was like getting the album, but they weren't paying for the album.
Because anyone listening, basically LimeWire was, I remember LimeWire used to do it, even though I think it was illegal, I think, wasn't it? But it's where you basically download music, and obviously the first thing to come on the scene like that was like, what, free music? This is amazing. But it took, but as if people had the cheek to bring a ripped off version.
In the end, our record label started putting people on at like the front of the queue to check what CDs they had, and if they had burnt ones, then they'd send them and say, no, you have to buy the actual album. So I think we kind of, I don't want to blame it all on that, but I think that played a part. I think we did become slight victims of that, because it was like the transition from buying hard copies of music to downloading music.
And also, I think, though, it was that time, like, it's a bit, well, I mean, the whole industry's changed beyond recognition now, but it was like 30, like I'm saying 36, like 36 was seen as rubbish, but actually 36 now, like Kylie Minogue recently, you know, has just made it back into the top 10, which everyone's like, wow. And you're kind of like, just the top 10. But we were of that mindset that, you know, number one or anything below five was like rubbish, aren't we? Which now it's not like that.
No, I mean, I think one of our singles, I'm not sure which one, I think was number 6 or 7. And I remember us all thinking, oh God, that's rubbish. That's really bad. That's terrible. But I mean, nowadays, if we was to put a single out now and it went to number 7, you know, we'd be jumping with joy.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? How things have changed. Unbelievable. So obviously then you didn't get the third album. So that was it was kind of the end of the band, because then was it soon after that, that basically, because we're in 2005 now, we must be around the same time. And then, so I think the first move was Strider, Flavour and Kenzie signed a new deal and they started Friday Hill. So how was that? There was that like, agree by everyone, or was that a bit of a stump in the road?
To be honest, so long ago, I don't really remember how that all played out, but I mean, it wouldn't have been any kind of snakiness or anything like that.
Right,
I mean,
it wasn't like a Claire and H and Sex who went and did their own song. No,
I mean, we was all quite open with each other and stuff, and all kind of happy for each other to go and do what they wanted to do. And I think those three were just naturally spending a lot of time in the studio making new tracks, and then it got picked up, so it kind of would have been a bit unfair for any of us to be like, well, I want to jump on that as well, because they'd kind of been putting the work to get songs written and recorded while the rest of us were kind of bone idle, kind of letting life just kind of flow by.
Yeah, and that's often, I mean, so many guests come on this, and that's after that. Normally, the normal path seems to be you have that success, then it goes, and then you kind of spend a couple of years maybe a bit lost, kind of spending money that you've earned, and then kind of realizing, oh, I need to do something now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember kind of thinking at the time, oh well, I was in Blazing Squad, I don't need to go and look for anything. Someone's going to come and find me and sign me.
Right. But okay.
Kind of had that kind of mentality about it for about a year, and then sort of realize, maybe I'm not that special, and I need to get up off my butt and start trying to do something.
And that's kind of what fame does. I mean, I think that still happens now, because basically when you are famous, you're kind of, you know, you've got people doing stuff for you, like you say, buying you clothes, organising your food. And it must be hard for that not to, even if it doesn't go to your head in terms of you become a dickhead, but even if it must go to your head in terms of just normal life kind of doesn't exist.
Yeah, that kind of becomes normal life. You kind of feel like getting picked up every day in a in a Mercedes car and going somewhere where there's loads of free clothes for you to try on and having everything sort of laid out for you, you kind of start feeling like that's just what life is.
And did you suffer yet afterwards? I mean, in all seriousness, did you kind of go through a bit of a or did you just come to terms with it easily?
I think it's probably different. But if I was a solo artist going through it on my own, then maybe I would have.
Yeah.
Because there was like 10 of us and we was all still in contact, all still doing stuff together and whatnot. It was probably a lot easier because you're not kind of dealing with it on your own. You're having conversations with each other of, what should we try and do now? Or what do you think of this? Or should we try and do this? And it's kind of a process that you're all going through together. So I think that definitely made it a lot easier for all of us.
And you did reform in 2006. That kind of went on for a bit. Obviously, then that didn't happen. So I'm going to whiz through all the band members. Just tell me, like, if you're still in touch and obviously, so in the band now, there's Freak, Rocky B. No, it's not. Sorry. Who's in the band now? It's you. It is, isn't it? It's Freak, Rocky B, and Spike E. Yeah. You're the four in the band. What are the other? Do you keep it? So what's Ken? I mean, because I'm guessing that in the meantime, obviously, we're talking a long time ago, 2006, and you four haven't been together all that time. Did you all go and get kind of, have you all stayed just in music, or have you all gone and got kind of, I mean, I hate to say normal jobs, but other jobs?
Yeah, a lot of us have got normal jobs now. We still do, and then the four of us still do quite a few shows. But we kind of, it's not our main thing now. We kind of do it more because it's good for us to get together. We still get to travel up and down the country doing shows, make a bit of extra money doing
great,
it as well.
And it's a good time.
But I don't think we'd ever try and put the pressure of making it full time back onto it again. That kind of takes the fun out of it.
Yeah. What do you do now?
I work just me and one of my other friends now with a security company doing arms and all that sort of stuff. And then obviously doing the shows with the boys.
And that's great. I mean, what a great little pastime. Like, I mean, it's pastime, but no, because obviously you're married now, you've got a kid, so life changes in that respect anyway. So I'm sure your wife wouldn't want you going around the world.
With the band. My son was only born in October of last year. And then the month after he was born, I was off on tour for pretty much the whole of November and December.
Oh no!
So that was a bit of a struggle. Yes, I don't think she'd appreciate me doing that every month.
No, and it's quite cool that like it's really come back, hasn't it? Like that, like the retroness has really.
Yeah,
it used to be a bit cheesy at people. Now it's completely celebrated, which is amazing.
I mean, it must be great.
Yeah, it must be great when you do like the Reminisce Festival. Who else is there this year? There's loads of people, isn't there?
There's loads of people there. Yeah, I mean, you've got us. I think Heather Small from M People. Boys Life, which I think is one of the members from West Life and Boyzone.
Yeah, we've had them on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Benga Boys, Fats and Small.
Benga Boys, amazing.
There's a whole list of loads of people. I think and Chesney Hawks is there.
Do you, Chesney Hawks has been on as well. Do you remember loads of these people as well? Is it like, because I've said to people like, well, older, the more the 80s pop stars like the Power and stuff. I'm like, do you now have a hot chocolate instead of like a bottle of whiskey afterwards? And she's like, no, I still have a bottle of whiskey. Is it weird going back to see some of the people you would have hung around with? And it's like now, what, 30 years later?
Yeah, it is. And it is and it isn't, because I mean, we've been doing shows like these sort of shows and like this kind of like circuit of shows for a few years now. So we're bumping into like the same people quite often, maybe like 6 or 7 times a year. So it's nice to bump into people and catch up and see how busy they've been, where they've been doing shows and whatnot. And it's quite good to hang around afterwards and have a little chit chat. It's not quite the after parties that are used to.
Not quite the wild part. I would have loved to be a part in the wall in one of those after parties. My biggest story was going to when Britney Spears had her film out, we went to her after party of that. And I can't even tell you the stories that happened. It was like, wow, that was my first.
Yeah.
View of like, wow.
I bet that was mental, yeah.
Yeah. Some other people, I've just found it. Some other people, Tony DeBart, oh my God, the real thing, Fats and Small, yeah, the Out Here Brothers. You, as we said, Venga Boys, Heather Small. I love
Heather Batman Scoop.
Batman Scoop.
Yeah.
Andy Brown, K-Class. Oh my God, that's going to be absolutely amazing. If you want to get tickets, by the way, I've got the website here. It's 9th of September. Shirdley Park, I think it is, in St. Helens, which is near
St.
Liverpool.
Helens, yeah.
Saturday, 9th September, and you go to www.reminisce. I can't even spell it, so I'll spell it for you. REMINIS C-E. Didn't realise it had that E in.
Yeah, festival.com.
Festival.com. You know, go on.
We had a song out called Reminisce, and I still don't know how to spell the word.
No, it's really thrown me. Seeing that now, I'm like, oh, wow, that's how it's spelled.
Yeah.
And which songs, which is there a song that's still, what about the fans, actually, quickly? What about the fans? Are they, do you now have kind of, because I've been to concerts to see like retro acts, and it's like weird because there's people my age that are obviously the original bands, and then there's a whole new generation of people's kids that now like this band.
Yeah, I mean, so we definitely have like some of the fans that were following us all them years ago still turn up, and it's people like a lot closer to our age. But I think with Marcel doing Love Island as well, I think that's opened up the door to like a younger fan base as well. So there is some like some younger people that turn up and seem to know our song still, which is a bit weird.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it? What were your did your fans have a name back in the day?
The Squadettes, Blazing Squadettes.
Yeah, it's the Blazing Squadettes. Yeah. I loved it. And it was crazy times, wasn't it? I mean, they were literally, fans were, I remember going, like, I did shoots with A1 and the Backstreet Boys, and it was like, oh my God, like, it was mental. Yeah.
It was, because I think nowadays you have so much access to the artists that you're interested in that you've got, there's no need to kind of leave your house to go and see what they're up to. Whereas back then there was no social media, so
to
realise that the band that you like listening to is in a venue near to where you live or doing a TV show up the road, it was reason to get up and get out of your house early. And we used to turn up to like SMTV and Saturday Show, and there'd be loads of fans waiting outside. But I think nowadays you don't really get that because they can just watch them on their Instagram live.
Yeah, just DM them or DM them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that I'm sure many people get replies if they DM people. But well, listen, mate, it's been amazing to have you on the podcast. Thanks for coming out. Fond memories of like the Saturday Show and literally running around trying to find like member 7 of the band when we were like live on air in five seconds or something. Like, oh my God, we've only got to quickly do a count and a name check. And yeah, Reminisce Festival, everyone, go and see you. Go and see all those other acts. And yeah, amazing for coming on. Thanks, mate.
With you. Thanks for having me.
I love Fridays and going retro with Pop from the Box. There are more pop stars coming your way very soon, as well as lots of TV and soap stars. Remember, Lucy Fallon was my guest this week. Download that and listen to that now. And on Monday, start of one of the best television shows for the last few years, I think, Ted Lasso. Annette Badland, she ran the pub in Ted Lasso. She was also Aunt Babe in EastEnders. She joins me for a very special chat. Have a great weekend. It's going to be sunny, everyone. I'm so excited. Have a great one, and I'll see you on Monday.